Welcome to High Cheese. It's Friday, March 15th, 2024. And I want to lead with the Loudermilk report. And this is the report by Congressman Loudermilk that totally debunks the J6 committee. Now, we've all known this. And we've all known that the J6 hearings were just a scam, just an attack on Donald Trump and MAGA to try to push Donald Trump out of the race, to try to destroy Donald Trump. And the importance of this Loudermilk report is that it codifies for history. It codifies for public record that the J6 hearings were just a scam. Now, there were a number of things that the report came out with, and many of them we already know. But there's one in particular, and I'll get into this later, that surprised me that I didn't even know about. And the first debunking I want to talk about is Cassidy Hutchinson. Now, Cassidy Hutchinson, during her testimony, made a claim Donald Trump had an altercation with Secret Service agents that resulted in him grabbing the steering wheel of the Beast, which is the car he rides in, and choking a Secret Service agent. And this was all debunked because the Loudermilk report had testimony of Secret Service agents that were there that didn't happen. Did not happen. And don't you find it ironic, I guess it was about 2 or 3 months ago, that Cassidy Hutchinson wanted to change her testimony. She wanted to go back and change her testimony. And I think there were 19 pages of revisions in her testimony. Now, I'm pretty sure that she knew at the time that this Loudermilk report was in the works, and it was eventually going to show that she lied. The second thing I wanted to talk about is Donald Trump requested that the National Guard be present at the Capitol on J6, and that was denied by the mayor of Washington. Now, the president just can't come out and place the National Guard anywhere. It has to be requested by a local unit or a state unit, and this request was denied. And Loudermilk points to the evidence that said that Donald Trump met internally with key figures, and they had determined that they wanted National Guard troops at the Capitol. And remember when it came out, and all the fact checkers said, oh, this was debunked, there's no evidence that Donald Trump requested this. Well, the only reason that there was no evidence is because the J6 committee suppressed it. Wouldn't let the American people know that, in fact, Donald Trump did request these troops. And the only reason it was denied because the mayor of Washington said no. Now, why did she? Now, there's a lot of speculation of why, and I think the most reasonable speculation is that they knew there was going to be problems on J6. They knew that Antifa was there, other groups that wanted to create havoc that weren't aligned with MAGA or Donald Trump. There were also FBI agents there. And what was the intent of their being there? So they knew there were going to be problems there, and they knew that the National Guard could suppress any problems that they would have at the Capitol that day. But they wanted the riots. And that's the only conclusion I can come to. That's the only reasonable conclusion that I can come to on this. Now, the third item that came up, which has surprised me, is that Fannie Willis had coordinated with the J6 committee to get testimony that she could use against Donald Trump in Atlanta. As a matter of fact, her staff coordinated with the J6 committee to obtain this information. That was news to me. But again, this is all coordinated. It's all coordinated with these left-wing Democrats, these communists, to get Donald Trump. All to create some type of narrative that Donald Trump's a bad guy at the expense of the Constitution, the truth. And then what they did, they didn't supply Loudermilk with any of that information. In some cases, they tried to delete the information. And in some cases, they destroyed information. But the important thing with this Loudermilk report is that it's now codified. It's now in public record. And the people now can make the choice of whether the J6 was a scam or not. Now, the mainstream media is not going to cover this, and they haven't covered this. But this kind of news trickles out to the American people, and they're figuring it out. That's why you take a look at Donald Trump in the polls, is that, yeah, It's not only the fact that we have terrible president Joe Biden in place that's wrecking this country, but this whole narrative for the past 3 years against Donald Trump is all fake. Fake news. Fake government. So we shall see. So, special counsel Robert Hur testified before Congress this week regarding his choosing not to indict Joe Biden over stealing top secret documents while he was a senator and vice president. And the reason he chose not to indict is because Joe Biden is a doddering old fool. And it would have been very hard to convict, in Hur's mind, it would be very hard to convict a doddering old fool because the jury may have sympathy for him. But I want to go to a couple of clips. The first clip is with Pramila Jayapal. And she's trying to put words into Hur's testimony. And it's the typical Democrat try to suppress the real intent of Hur, use her own words in order to create some kind of narrative. Again, it's all about a narrative with these Democrats, not about the truth. You got to create a narrative. And that's the problem with the world today and many of our institutions. It's all about creating a story. It may not be true, but we're going with it. So let's go to this clip with Jayapal. She's trying to talk over her over whether Biden was exonerated. So let's go to the clip and then we'll come back and discuss.
So this lengthy, expensive, and independent investigation resulted in a complete exoneration of President Joe Biden. For every document you discussed in your report, you found insufficient evidence that the president violated any laws about possession or retention of classified materials.
Congresswoman, that is one statute that we analyzed. I need to go back and make sure that I take note of the word that you used, exoneration. That
Mr.
is not a word.
Kerr, I'm going to continue with my questions. I'm going to continue with my questions. I know that the term
I ultimately reached was whether sufficient evidence existed such that the likely outcome
you exonerated
a conviction.
I know that the term willful retention has a Mr. Kerr, it's my time.
And here you have Jayapal just trying to put words into Hur's mouth, just for the narrative. Now, Hur's report said that, yes, Joe Biden did willfully retain top secret documents, which is a crime. But the task of these prosecutors, they have to weigh whether they could get a conviction. And Hur said that, well, Biden's state of mind, he was just has such a weak state of mind that it may incur sympathy from a jury, which would make it hard for a conviction. Now, I disagree with him, and I just think this is another example of a two-tiered system. Look at Donald Trump. Donald Trump is being indicted for essentially the same thing. However, the big kicker in this is that Donald Trump, as president, had every right to take these documents, every constitutional right to take these documents, whereas there is no constitutional right for a senator or a vice president to take top secret documents and then share them with the ghostwriter on his memoirs. Now, I want to contrast Jayapal with Matt Gaetz. So let's go to Matt Gaetz, and then we'll come back and discuss.
The president, I did not share classified information. I did not share it. I guarantee I did not. That's not true, is it, Mr. Hur?
That is inconsistent with the findings based on the evidence in my report.
Yeah, so it's a lie. It's just what regular people would say, right? Yeah, all right. So the next one. And all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. That wasn't true either, was it?
That was inconsistent with the findings of our investigation.
As Mr. Armstrong laid out, you find in your report that the elements of a federal criminal violation are met, but then you apply this senile cooperator theory that because Joe Biden cooperated and the elevator doesn't go to the top floor, you don't think you get a conviction. And I actually think you get to the right answer in that. I don't think Biden should have been charged. Don't think Trump should have been charged. But under the senile cooperator theory, isn't it frustrating that Biden continues to go out and lie about the basic facts of the report that lay out a federal criminal violation?
And Gaetz didn't put words into Hur's mouth. He just read from the transcript and said, is this a lie, Mr. Hur? Mr. Hur said, yes. And Biden continues to lie about this, just flat out lies. But this is what you should expect from an illegitimate regime. They have to keep their power and they'll lie about it. So we shall see. So speaking about lying, I want to go to one of Biden's press secretaries. And she flat out lies regarding Joe Biden's apologizing for calling illegal immigrants during his State of the Union address. And the first thing I want to do is I want to go to an interview. It's with Jonathan Capehart from, I think, MSNBC. And he's interviewing Biden, and Biden apologizes in this interview. So let's go to the interview, and then we'll go to the lying press secretary.
But during your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lakeland Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And
so you regret using that word?
Yes.
President Biden apologized for calling Lakeland Riley's killer an illegal. Does he feel like he needs to apologize to illegal immigrants for calling them what they are, or using the term illegal? Well, first of all, I want to be really clear about something. The president absolutely did not apologize. There was no apology anywhere in that conversation. He did not apologize. He used a different word.
And let's go to the definition of apology. And it says here, apology, a regretful acknowledgement of an offense or failure. Well, that sounds like an apology to me, but not according to Biden's press person. And this is the problem that we have with today, particularly the doublespeak that comes out of Washington. I call them literal liars. And that's why they're so disingenuous. That's why they're so misleading. And that's why the public does not believe them. Literal liars. That's what they are. Oh, did the president's dog ever bite a Secret Service agent? No, never did. But the president's German Shepherd did. And this is how they think. And I don't know if it's because of stupidity or just the way they've been educated, but something's wrong. And they also did it with Donald Trump's position on Social Security. Now, Donald Trump is not going to touch Social Security benefits. And Trump had an interview with CNBC this week, and they asked him about cutting entitlements. And Trump made a comment that there is some administrative costs that they can cut in a lot of the bureaucracies in Washington, including Social Security. But what the Biden campaign did is just cut short that interview. Cut it right at the spot where Trump said cut. And they didn't want to tell you that Trump's all for cutting administrative costs at Social Security, but he's not for cutting benefits. So I don't know if this is an act of desperation, an act of stupidity, or just a warped way of thinking in Washington. It could be all three. So we shall see. So, the TikTok legislation overwhelmingly passed the House this week. Overwhelmingly. Seriously bipartisan. And what this legislation will do, it will force ByteDance, the Chinese company that owns TikTok, to divest itself and sell to an American company, or TikTok will be banned. Now, this TikTok is dangerous for several reasons. One is that it really can warp American society, and I think it already is. Take a look at what it's doing to our children. I personally think that a lot of this transgenderism being pushed on children is coming through TikTok. But it's not just that. It could be anything politically, because they control these algorithms. They control these. They control what videos to push out to people. And not only that, they have access to anything that's on your cell phone, laptop, which includes banking information, passwords, pictures of your family. And believe you me, if China wanted to do damage to the American people, all they have to do is just go through TikTok. Get all the information from TikTok and just throw a wrench into the entire day-to-day operations of the United States. And I'm not overstating this. It's a national security threat. You don't think that China is specifically looking at passwords on, say, some nuclear scientist that goes on TikTok? See what he, if he loads any passwords onto his cell phone or onto his computer. You don't think they're going to try to do that and create havoc as a result? It's clearly a national security issue. Now, I've heard there's several people that are interested in buying TikTok. Former Treasury Secretary Mnuchin under Trump is looking to buy it. I'm sure there's several other people that are interested to buy it also. So now it goes to the Senate. And Chuck Schumer is in a tight spot. Is he going to let it hit the floor of the Senate? My instincts tell me he's going to let this drag out. Now, there's several senators that are not in favor of this. And you've got Rand Paul. You've got Senator Lee. They're ultimate free speech people. And I respect them, but I disagree with them. I mean, did Tokyo Rose have a right to speak to the troops? That was free speech. That was coming from an adversary of ours. The same way that TikTok is coming from an adversary of ours. And President Trump has said that he's not supporting this legislation. Well, I respectfully disagree. So I'm sure this is going to meander in the Senate for a while. I'm sure Chuck Schumer is going to just try to bury it, see if it goes away. He's hoping, and I'll be surprised if it brings it to the floor immediately, but he's kind of hoping that everything just, people forget about this. And in the middle of election season, people will forget the fact that this is sitting on Chuckie Schumer's desk. So we shall see. So here's some good news, and this is from USA Today. It says England stops prescribing puberty blockers, citing not enough evidence. The National Health Services of England announced Tuesday it will not routinely prescribe puberty blockers for children and young people experiencing gender dysphoria. The decision, posted online, referenced research collected by the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence in 2020 that raised concerns of uncertainty in the treatment's efficacy and potential side effects. We have concluded that there is not enough evidence to support the safety or clinical effectiveness of puberty-suppressing hormones to make the treatment routinely available at this time, the publication said. The UK Secretary of State for Health and Social Care was supportive of the NHS's move. Care that affects our children's health and well-being so profoundly must always be based on clinical evidence, she wrote on X. I welcome the NHS decision today to end the routine prescription of puberty blockers to children. And this follows Sweden, who I think it was a year or two ago just stopped entirely their transitioning programs for children. They essentially came out and said, look, we tried, but there's not enough evidence and we're concerned about what we're doing to the children. There's just not enough evidence to say that it helps them. Well, why isn't that in the United States? And I'll tell you why this isn't going on in the United States. It's because the United States medical profession are using our children as guinea pigs. That's what they're doing. There's no empirical evidence that says this helps children. It's all anecdotal. And I think these other countries are taking a look at the United States and say, oh, let the United States take care of that. Let the United States experiment on their children. And what I find really, really problematic with the medical profession here in the United States, they've seen what Sweden did. Sweden was the leader in the transitioning of children, and they just stopped it. But not here in the United States. It's because our medical profession is unethical. There's too much money to be made. That's why they're looking the other way. They're not following science. They're following the money. And that's why they're pushing to have school systems, to have the courts take away parents' rights to raise their kids. Because it's good for these institutions, it's good for the medical profession's pocketbooks, and it's got to stop. So we shall see. Okay, let's talk about inflation. Inflation figures came out this week. CPI came in on Tuesday, and the PPI came in on Thursday. And both indexes were either higher than the previous month or higher than market expectations. But what do you expect? We've got an economy being run on government spending and a government that is borrowing this money to keep the economy going. And that's what's causing this inflation. So there's a double whammy. The government spends, it throws all this money, and I'm simplifying everything, but it throws all this money into the economy, which is inflationary. And then on the other side, because they borrowed the money, Treasury has to go out and sell bonds to fund this economy. And because there's so many bonds out there, remember, we're at $34 trillion in debt. And we're accumulating about $2 trillion a year in debt because of the budgets that the people in Washington have put together. So because you've got a massive amount of bonds that the Treasury is selling, because of the laws in supply and demand, interest rates are going to go up. And that's the double whammy of government spending. And the problem with this mindset that deficits don't matter, it's called modern monetary theory. It's insane. All it does is put an economy on one of those hamster treadmills. You got to keep going, got to keep going, got to keep going. Because if you stop, everything collapses. And this is unsustainable. This debt is unsustainable. This government spending is unsustainable. And then to add insult to injury, Biden releases his 2025 fiscal year budget, over $7 trillion. And it's another budget that's going to accumulate another $2 trillion in deficits. And Biden's such a liar. He's, at this point, he is just a flat-out liar. Now, I guess he's always been, but he's being so brazen about it. He had the nerve to say, well, this budget is going to reduce the deficit by $1 trillion. It's a lie. This budget he just put out there is going to increase the deficit by about $2 trillion. Can't be clearer. He's lying to you when he says that. Okay, let's take a look at this month's breakdown of the CPI. Beef, up 9.2% year over year. Baby food and formula, up 8.8%. Sugar, up 6.1%. Tomatoes, up 4.7%. Fats and oils, up 4.6%. Motor vehicle insurance, up 20.6% year over year. Non-prescription drugs, up 9.3%. Motor vehicle repair, up 8.5%. Outpatient hospital services, up 7.9%. And eggs, I was looking at eggs. Over the past 2 months, the price of eggs have doubled. I like eggs. I like to eat eggs. And I always look for the prices of eggs. But over the past 2 months, the price of eggs has nearly doubled. And that's going to show up in future reports. But Joe Biden is leading this country to economic ruin. And remember that in November. So we shall see. Now, Boeing has had a lot of problems recently with its airplanes. We've had a door that's blown off mid-flight. We've had another plane just take a drastic nosedive mid-air. And a number of other maintenance issues regarding Boeing. But I want to relate this to DEI. And here's the problem with DEI. The underlying assumption with DEI is that it's about race, it's about gender, it's not about competence. In the same way that nepotism is. Nepotism is just as bad as DEI, in the sense that there's an underlying assumption that it's not about competence. And we have to assume this when we're looking at hires. And with that said, let's go to the metrics of DEI. Because the metrics don't lie. And I want to go to the most recent Boeing DEI annual report. And the report says here, let's take a look at women have been hired at Boeing. In 2020, women made up 13.8% of the workforce in production and maintenance. Then in 2021, it jumped to 15.4% of women in production and maintenance. And then in 2022, it jumped to 16.6% of the workforce in production and maintenance. Now let's take a look at race and ethnicity. In production and maintenance in 2020, ethnic minorities made up 36%. Of the workforce there. Then in 2021, it jumped to 38.4% of the workforce in production and maintenance. And then in 2022, it jumped up to 42.5% of the production and maintenance workforce. Now, let's take a look at veterans. Meanwhile, you've had increases in women and minorities at Boeing, but the number of U.S. veterans that make up the workforce at Boeing has decreased in 2020, and this is overall. Doesn't give specifics on maintenance. But overall, veterans went from 14.8% of the overall workforce in 2020 down to 14.6% in 2022. And one thing you do want in the airline industry, you want veterans. They know how to fly planes. They know how to maintain planes. They understand what it takes to keep jets flying in a safe way. And I'm not knocking minorities. I'm not knocking women. I am knocking the fact that DEI puts race and gender above competence in the same way that nepotism does. Now, these are the metrics. You have to take a look at it. These are the metrics. You can't deny them. And I'm urging Boeing to take a second look at this program and who they're hiring, what the competence level is. Because here's the problem. A lot of these companies, they really don't care. It's all about checking the box. Oh, you want to hire a minority? You want to hire a woman? It doesn't matter whether they know how to maintain an airplane. Looks good on a report. And I blame management on this as much as those people that are pushing DEI. In the same way, nepotism affects your underlying business. You don't want to hire the son of a CEO or a son of a top manager that's not competent, not good for the company. So I urge Boeing to take a look at this program because people may die because of your decisions. So did you see what happened at West Point this week? The West Point superintendent, Lieutenant General Steve Gilland, announced a new mission statement for West Point that replaces the words duty, honor, country with a more generic Army values. Now, the previous mission statement for West Point read as follows: to educate, train, and inspire the Corps of Cadets so that each graduate is a commissioned leader of character committed to the values of duty, honor, country, and prepared for a career of professional excellence and service to the nation as an officer in the United States Army. Now, this has been replaced with the following: to build, educate, train, and inspire the Corps of Cadets to be commissioned leaders of character committed to the Army values and ready for a lifetime of professional excellence and service to the Army and nation. Now, this is just another way to undermine our military. It's just diluting what the mission of West Point is. Well, what are Army values? Whatever they tell us. Whatever the people in power tell us. And again, did I say this isn't a way to undermine our military? No clear goals. No clear commitment. Oh, I'm just committed to what the Army tells me I should be committed to. Whatever that may be. And whatever society says at the time the Army values are. So we shall see. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about is the judge down in Atlanta made a decision on Fannie Willis and her boyfriend Nathan Wade. And what the judge concluded is that Nathan Wade's got to go. Fannie Willis can stay on the case, but she's got to fire Nathan Wade, her boyfriend. If she doesn't, she's got to go too. And that's it in a nutshell. And by the way, did I mention that this same judge dismissed 3 counts against Donald Trump earlier this week? Now, what this does, it puts Donald Trump in a better position if he needs to appeal this case. Now, the interesting thing I find, and not a lot of people are talking about, the judge suggested that Willis could be disciplined through legal boards or by voters. The judge said Willis may be punished by other venues. He said other forums or sources of authority, such as the General Assembly, the Georgia State Ethics Commission, the State Bar of Georgia, the Fulton County Board of Commissioners, or the voters of Fulton County may offer feedback to any unanswered questions that linger, the judge wrote. Now, also what happened this week is Governor Kemp reconstituted a committee that allows them to go after prosecutors. And we'll see where this takes us. So with that said, you have a good week. Thank you for listening. And I will talk to you next Saturday.